The Thomas Jason case is another of the Richard Diamond programs that we have in the collection and are proud to share with you right now. From the last day of the year, December 31st, 1949, it's the Thomas Jason case on Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Portions of the following program are transcribed. Here's Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Is this the Diamond Detective Agency?
Well, what does the sign on the door say?
Diamond Detective Agency.
And take a guess.
Are you Mr. Richard Diamond?
It depends. How much does he owe you?
Nothing.
You just want to speak to him?
I do.
You come as a client?
Yes, I do.
You have $100 a day in expenses?
Yeah, I do.
Then I now pronounce this man and client. Your name, please?
My name's Thomas Jason.
The stockbroker? You better pay cash.
Oh, I'm retired now, Mr. Diamond. And to end this nonsense, here's your $100.
Oh, thank you. Now, what's your trouble?
It's Carol, my adopted daughter. We adopted her when she was 12, but my wife died shortly after. Frankly, Carol has been trouble ever since.
And now?
Now, I'm afraid it is no longer a matter of delinquency. Well, there have been several incidents that make me suspect that she's trying to do away with me.
Oh, sweet girl. What's her reason?
My money. In my will, she is my only heir.
Why not change the will?
I said I suspected her, but I'm not certain, Mr. Diamond. And you understand, it would be terrible to disinherit her if I am wrong about my suspicions. I simply must be sure before I change my will.
Does she have any idea of your suspicion?
Yes. This morning I did speak to her, mentioned the possibility of cutting her from my will. She flew into a rage, made several terrible threats.
Oh, what do you want me to do?
I want you to...
Oh, excuse me. Diamond Detective Agency, we have the only corpse with a lie-down design.
Oh, Rick, why don't you answer the phone right?
Okay, Helen, baby. Diamond Detective Agency, Mr. Richard Diamond speaking.
What?
See, it throws you.
Mr. Diamond.
Honey, I'll see you tonight. I got a client.
She?
He.
Good.
Bye. You were saying, Mr. Jason, before I was so nicely interrupted...
Yes, I want you to either prove my fears to be true or groundless. If I am right, I will change my will, of course.
Where do I start?
Come to my house at 3 this afternoon. Here's the address. I'll introduce you to my stepdaughter, Carol, as a business acquaintance. After you've met and talked with her, I'll give you what details I have about her threats and actions.
Okay, Mr. Jason, I'll be at your place at 3 this afternoon.
Good day, Mr. Diamond.
I checked the time and found it to be nearly 12, so I beat it out to grab a bite of food before the noon rush began. Cafes in downtown Manhattan at lunchtime can only be compared to a can of sardines after all their relatives move in. When I had downed my daily bread, I went back to the office, did a little washing, and found myself with still time to kill. So being interested in my new client's problems and always liking a clear view of a new case, I dropped in at the 5th Precinct to see what Lieutenant Levison had on the Jason family. When I walked into the squad room, I found Sergeant Otis tilted back in his chair with his number 14s crossed on the desk in front of him. From the sounds he was making, he was either sleeping or gargling with molasses. Sergeant Otis.
You're a boy.
Sergeant Otis.
Some guy.
Otis, wake up.
Oh, it's you, Shamus.
Patrol Leader Diamond with the stout-hearted brownies who were shocked by your dreams. Shame on you.
Hey, how'd you know I was dreaming about a dame?
I peeked. You know, I think I'll tell the lieutenant that you were sleeping on the job.
Well, no, please don't do that, Shamus. You start me pounding the beat again. Please don't tell him.
Well, maybe I'll let you off the hook, but only if you tell Walt we're pals. That might stop him from giving me the devil about ribbing you.
Pals? You mean friends?
Buddies.
Oh, no, I couldn't stand it.
Hello, Walt.
Okay, so where's the body?
No body. You lost one?
Now, you stop that.
Well, get you. All mad because I can't find a body for you.
Now, please, Rick. What do you want?
I just wanted any dope you might have on the Thomas Jason family.
Jason?
Yeah, the broker.
Oh, nothing on him, but plenty on his stepdaughter, Carol.
Like what?
Oh, she's a regular. Usually D&D, drunk driving, disturbing the peace. You want to see the file?
Yeah, I might be worth a look. Have my pal, Otis, bring it in.
Sure,
You what?
My pal. What did you know? Otis and I are friends.
Is that why he tries to hide under the desk every time he sees you coming?
Call him in, see for yourself.
You think I won't? Otis, get the file on Carol Jason. Bring it in here.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
Now we'll see. Friend, that's a laugh.
That's a laugh yourself. You better be feeling good.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
You'll see.
Yeah, Lieutenant, here's the file.
I'll take it, Otis. Thank you very much.
Sergeant Otis, you have an opportunity to do me a great favor. Please, and without profanity, tell me what you think of Rick.
Oh, he's nice.
What?
You're turning blue, Walt.
I'll turn blue if I want to. What did you do to Otis? Dope him?
You heard him. He thinks I'm nice. We're pals, buddies.
I heard him all right, but I wouldn't believe it on the stack of police manuals. Otis, I'll give you one chance. What's this all about?
The Shamus told you, Lieutenant. I think he's a swell egg. A great guy.
Thank you, Otis, my friend.
Always kidding, but a good pal.
Otis, do your feet ache?
My feet? Why, no, Lieutenant.
Well, they will. I'm sending you to a beat.
A beat?
Yes, in Yonkers.
Oh, no!
I went through the file on Carol Jason and found out Walt hadn't been kidding. She'd been picked up for everything from kicking dogs to slugging her boyfriend with a champagne bottle. Real nice girl. I left Walt trying to third degree the truth out of Otis and headed for what I hoped would be a nice, easy case. In a few minutes, I was in front of my client, Jason's house on East 66th Street. It turned out to be a modest little shack of some 30 rooms with a brownstone cover. I was ushered in to wait in the library for Thomas Jason, but I got a surprise.
Mr. Diamond?
Well, now, I'll bet you're Carol. Your stepfather's told me so much about you.
You're a friend of my stepfather's?
Well, you might say we have things in common. Where is he?
I'm afraid you can't see him, Mr. Diamond. You see, he's become quite ill.
Oh, ill so quickly? I talked to him a few hours ago. He's about as sickly as Paul Bunyan.
Mr. Diamond, will you please leave?
Not until you tell me what happened to Jason, where he is, and why I can't see him.
Get out. Do you hear me? Get out.
Oh, put a cork in it, honey. Your father suspected trouble. Apparently, it came quicker than he thought. Me, I want to know all your little secrets.
Just who are you? Policeman?
Private policeman, dear. Your father hired me this morning.
Well, I'm firing you this afternoon. Father's ill, and I will not allow him to be disturbed.
He paid me for a day's work. Tomorrow you can fire me. Is he here?
No. Now, will you get out, or do I call the real police?
No, maybe you'd better, dear. There's a smell around here that isn't a room full of roses.
All right. If it's going to save trouble, I will tell you this much. Father had a serious mental condition. This afternoon, a couple of hours ago, he had an attack. And I was forced to have him taken to a place where he could be treated properly.
With what? Embalming fluid?
Why, you insulting!
Where was he taken? Who's the doctor?
I think I've answered all the questions I need to, Mr. Diamond. My actions are entirely legal. If you persist in your insinuations, I shall see that your license is revoked and that you are charged with defamation of character.
Oh, get you. You've been reading up on the law, and I'll bet I know why. All right, dear. I'll leave now.
Go on, and don't come back.
Temper, temper, temper. I'm going, but we'll see each other again. Hello, Pop. Got a minute?
Yeah, I reckon so, mister. What's on your mind?
Oh, questions. Like how long you've been out here mowing the lawn?
Most of the day. Why?
Did you, see Mr. Jason leave?
Oh, sure. Left in an ambulance, he did. He was wearing a funny white coat with the arms tied in back. My fashion certainly changed.
You didn't notice any name on the ambulance, did you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did, mister. Oh, my, it was a silly name. About the silliest I've ever heard of.
Oh, the name, Pop. What was it?
Oh, don't be in such a dang rush. It was Home Sweet Home Rest Home. Oh, no. Ain't that silly?
I don't think my client agrees with you. If he was taken there for a rest, it may be a permanent one. Next stop, a drugstore with a phone book. Said book gave me the address, and I was soon in Baychester looking at something pretty swank in the way of nut houses. Home Sweet Home was 2 acres of lawn, trees, and a square white blockhouse. and all surrounded by 15 feet of spike steel fencing. By this time, the setup was really beginning to smell, and I decided that maybe a Shamus might not be welcome. So for a moment, I stood by the big gate debating how I could get in. The answer was fairly simple. I rang the bell. It caused a huge character wearing a white jacket with arms like hairy telephone poles to appear.
Yeah? What can I do for you, mister?
Let me in.
Why?
This is a rest home, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I want to rest.
Oh, funny. Beat it.
I want to speak to the doctor, King Kong. Is he in?
Maybe, maybe not. Who wants him?
I do.
Who are you?
Let's just say I'm a patient. You going to keep me out here dying of schizophrenia?
Dr. Thorne is busy now. Come back later.
Look, in 1 minute I start throwing fits. Think how that'll ruin your trade.
Yeah, the doc wouldn't like that. Maybe you had better come in.
Now, that's right and neighborly of you, friend.
Wow. Nice place.
For nuts?
Please. I'm a patient, remember?
So, if you're a nut, I should care. If you ain't, why should you?
Now, that's a homely bit of philosophy. Tell me, what do you do here? Break skulls?
I don't think I like you. And I'm a nurse.
What a shock this will be to Dr. Kildare.
I don't know him.
Now, you wouldn't. His nurses are pretty. If he had to have you as a nurse, he'd quit medicine and take up playing the glockenspiel.
Well, you're nuts. Wait here. I get the doctor.
Yes, nurse.
Dr. Thorne, you got a patient, I think.
All right, Brazo. I am Dr. Thorne, sir. What can I do for you?
He's nuts, Doc.
Be quiet, Brazo.
Oh, he's right, Doc. I'm nuttier than a squirrel's hideout.
Well, I'm afraid I can be of no assistance, Mr.
Promise you won't tell?
Did I promise?
I am Sherlock Holmes.
What?
H-O-L.
I can spell. I'm afraid you've come to the wrong place, Mr. Holmes. This is a private sanitarium, and certain procedures must be followed.
I have money, I can pay, and I want to stay here.
But, Mr. Holmes, you must be examined by a doctor and committed by a relative.
You're a doctor, examine me.
But your relative, you can't commit yourself.
Why not? I demand my rights.
Oh, this is preposterous. This is not a hotel. You can't just come in and register. Tell me, who's your doctor? Where is your home?
Well, look. Tell you what, you let me stay here for the day and I'll tell you who my doctor is. And if you don't let me stay, I'll tell everyone what a bad place you have.
You said something about having money. Just how much money?
I've got a mattress full. Can I stay?
Perhaps it can be arranged, though of course I must examine you.
Of course.
And there will be a certain fee, you understand?
I'm beginning to.
Tell me, Mr.
H-O-L.
Stop! You certainly are most annoying. Tell me, why do you want to stay here anyway?
Well, I've got to stop the plot.
The plot? You know about that?
Sure. You planned to rub out Fearless Fosdick, but I'm not going to let you.
Oh, I see. Tell me, do you have any dreams?
Well, of course. I have dreams about eating ice cream cones, and oh, what a mess they are.
What's so messy about eating an ice cream cone?
My mouth is always filled with BBs.
BBs?
For my air rifle, stupid. How else could I stand off the Indians?
What Indians?
Well, the Indians who want to steal my ice cream cones.
Now, why would Indians want your ice cream cones?
Oh, they're mad about pistachio.
You are crazy, aren't you? Brazo, take Mr.
H-O-L.
Oh, never mind. Take him to Observation Room B, Brazo. I don't have time for the examination now.
Can't I be with the other patients? I get lonely.
Later.
Come on, Sherlock. This way.
Well, I was in, thanks to the good doctor not being able to pass up a possible easy buck. The big ape Brazo led me to a small room with bars on the window and a spring lock on the door. When he left, I made like a smart gumshoe and went after the lock with my penknife. Due to my early training in picking locks at the automat, I was out like Alabama. I found myself in a long hall with 7 rooms, 3 on each side and 1 at the end. I knocked on every door. Nothing. Not even Bogart. The last one had to be Jason. Are you in there, Mr. Jason?
Diamond.
Oh, I am glad to hear your voice. Please, get me out of here.
Just take it easy. I don't have a key, and this door has a padlock on it.
But you must get me out.
Sure, but give me time. First, tell me what's the score. Why did they lock you up?
Carol had it planned. She has paid Dr. Thorne to keep me here until I go crazy. She wants to have me judged legally insane so she can take the estate.
Yeah, well, maybe I can put a few kinks in her plan.
Wait, Diamond, where are you going?
There's a phone in the doctor's office. If no one's there, I'll use it to get help.
Yes, but what if you can't get to the phone?
Then I go out and get the Marines. If I can get by that ape man, that locked gate. Don't go away.
Oh, there you are, Sherlock.
Oh, don't pick on me. I was only 3.5 years old.
I'm upset with you, Sherlock. You oughtn't to be running around the halls like this.
Well,
huh?
A guy's got to have his constitutional, Brazo.
Yeah, well, you're through with yours. The doc wants to examine you now.
I've changed my mind. I don't think I'd like it here.
I said the doc wants you. What the doc wants, he gets.
Well, bully for him, but this is one time you won't. I'm leaving.
I don't want to break your arm, Sherlock.
No?
So you don't leave until the doc says so.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint him, but certain things are necessary, like this.
Oh.
Now, you shouldn't act like that. I might get mad.
Oh, my knuckles. What is your jaw made of, concrete?
Come on, Sherlock. Or do you want to try again?
No, thanks. One busted hand is enough.
And don't try to run. The gate's locked. And if I have to catch you, I'll fix your leg so you can't run again.
Oh, friendly little butcher, aren't you?
Right in here, Sherlock. The doc is waiting. Here he is, Doc.
Good. You can go back to the office, Brazo. I won't need you. Well, you seem to be well trained as a detective, Mr. Holmes. Do you always pick locks so easily?
I do better with my erector set. But you needn't examine me further. I've changed my mind.
You've changed your... This is odd. First you demand in, now you want out.
I just remembered I forgot to pick up my station wagon.
But the Indians, you want me to help you keep them from stealing your ice cream cones, don't you?
They already got them, and all my money, too. They're both gone.
Your money? Then you don't have any money?
Not a bolivar. Now, may I go, Doctor?
You're going to stay right here, Mr. Holmes. There's something peculiar about the way you've recovered from your illusions.
Doc, Miss Jason to see you. She's in your office.
Very well, Brazo. Stay here and guard this man, whoever he is.
Holmes, H-O-L...
Will you shut up? And make sure he stays put this time, Brazo. I have some questions I want to ask him.
He won't go no place, Doc. You go ahead to the office.
Well, Carol... This is a pleasant surprise. Come to visit Jason.
Thorne, our plans will have to be changed.
Changed?
Something has come up that may cause an investigation of stepfather's illness. We can't afford to take a chance of that.
But we can't let Jason go now.
I had no such intentions. He must be taken care of tonight.
Taken care of? But that's impossible. How could
He must be gotten rid of.
What? Oh, no. No, I didn't bargain for murder.
Look, Thorne, you're in and you stay in. I've paid you $10,000. Don't forget it.
But why all this sudden rush to change our plan? Why can't we do
it? A private detective came to see me this morning. He was hired by stepfather. I knew he had suspicions, but I didn't know they'd gone so far.
A detective?
Oh, he can't act legally, but he's the sort to cause trouble.
Detective, private detective, Sherlock Holmes.
Who's rambling about?
I'm afraid we're in serious trouble. Come with me.
What?
Your private detective. I think he's already found Jason. Come on.
You wouldn't like to earn $100, would you, Brazo?
No.
It is you, Diamond.
Uh-oh, fun's over.
Thorne, you fool, how'd he get in here?
He said he was a patient, Carol, and I swear he seemed crazy enough.
He probably said he had money.
You seem to understand each other, honey, but do you mind? I'd like to take Mr. Jason home
now.
For
a couple of extra dollars, you let him walk right in. Oh, Thorne, you're an idiot. I suppose he found Jason and talked to him.
Well, he did get out of his room and wander about.
Oh, that's great. So now I know the whole works.
Too bad, baby. Your plan is kaput.
Not quite, Diamond. You've just talked yourself into real trouble. This gun says for you not to get any bright ideas.
My IQ just dropped 30 points.
Shut him up, Brazo.
Sure.
Hey, now wait a minute.
Oh! Now stay with him while Thorne and I make arrangements. We won't be long.
Did I get the...
Yes, Brazo, when we're ready. Yeah. Come on, Thorne. I want to talk to stepfather.
Brazo's fist was made of the same stuff as his jaw. By the time I came around, darkness had painted the window, and the room was full of shadow and Brazo. The big hulk was squatting a few feet away, paying no attention to me. So I waited till my mind was clear while I eased off my right shoe. The heel was leather with a steel plate in it. I could only hope it was harder than Brazo's skull. With the shoe in my hand behind me, I was ready, only to have him catch me stirring.
Coming too, eh, Shamus?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Hand me my cigarettes, will you, Brazo?
Need a smoke, eh? Sure. Where are they?
Fell out of my pocket, over there behind you.
Where? I don't see you. Say, that's not...
Need another?
Stop that.
Oh, come on, Buster, fall. Well, is little old Brazo finally getting sleepy?
Happy New Year, Buster.
Levinson, homicide.
Walt, Rick, if you don't want me to be a customer of yours, get out to the home sweet home rest home fast.
What? Hey, what kind of a gag is this now?
It's no gag, believe me. My client and I are the blue plate specials, and dinner is about to be served.
The home sweet... Oh, it still sounds like a gag. Who'd call anything that?
Now, don't argue, Walt. It's no joke.
Okay, Rick, what's the address?
1820 Allerton Avenue, Baychester. And bring a blowtorch to cut an iron gauge. You may have to.
All right, I'll be there in 30 minutes.
The quicker, if you can.
Stand right there, Diamond. Or I'll use this gun.
Good afternoon. I represent the sleep
tight... Looks like I came just in time. Only now that you've fixed Brazo, you'll have to dig your own grave.
Dig my own grave? Oh, honey, is this trip really necessary?
Keep moving or I'll kill you right here.
I move.
Keep going. Over there behind those trees where Thorne and Jason are.
Well, is Jason...
He's alive, but not for long.
Where's Brazo? I thought he was going to...
Diamond knocked him out. They can dig their own graves. There, the shovels. Get busy.
Carol, please, you may have the money. I swear...
Shut up and dig.
Carol, this is...
Just work the shovel.
Can you imagine Richard Diamond, private detective, letting a sawed-off female make him dig his own grave? You can't? Well, she did. And for a good half hour. I stalled as long as I could to give Walt Levinson a chance to get there.
That's enough. I said that's deep enough.
Oh, please. I'm just started.
You're finished. Jason, get into that hole with him.
Very well. I guess this is it, Diamond. Sorry to have dragged you in.
Well, that's a horrible way to say it. Don't we get time for a last cigarette?
No. Thorne, take this gun.
What? Oh, no, I'm not going to kill them.
Shut up and take this gun.
Oh, don't do it, Thorne. Be a man about it.
Here, Thorne. Don't be such a weakling. Two shots and it's over.
No. It was your idea. I'm no murderer.
Shut up, boy. Stick up for your rights.
You shut up. Thorne, do you do the job or do I make you number three in that grave?
You wouldn't dare. You need me.
Shut up, boy, Thorne. Tell her.
Go on, Thorne. Take the gun.
No, I can't. I just can't. Not like this.
You weakling. I'll do it myself. Now, turn around, Diamond.
Oh, now, look, baby, this thing's getting out of hand. You shoot me and the law will be all over the place.
Not until I've filled that grave in over you.
I called him, baby.
Oh, you're lying.
Am I? Well, just turn around and take a look at that lovely, big, fat policeman standing over there by that tree.
Oh, you really don't expect me to fall for an old stunt like that.
Well, if you don't, you'll fall for something. It's your funeral.
No, it isn't. It's yours.
All right, lady, drop it.
What? Why, you...
Smarty.
I'll kill you anyway.
Carol.
Rick, what the devil's going on here? What are you doing down there?
I'm looking at the girl. I think you shot her pretty bad.
Who are these two guys?
The guy with the castanet knees is Doc Thorne. Better put the cuffs on him as an accessory.
But you can't do this. I was the one that refused to shoot you.
Oh, stop licking my hand. You can tell it to the precinct judge.
Otis, snap the cuffs on him and take him out the car.
Sure.
Come on, you. Now, what about this other guy?
The girl's stepfather. How do you feel, Mr. Jason?
Sick, Mr. Diamond.
How about the girl, Rick? Shall I call the ambulance?
I don't know. Carol.
Well, Rick?
Take your time, Walt. She's not with us. I gave Walt the story, then took Jason to his house. Stayed there long enough to brush the dirt off my clothes, wash my hands, and then I headed for a delayed date. At 975 Park Avenue, I found a big fireplace and a lovely redhead waiting for me. A redhead wearing a dress that was part green silk and part... Well.
I'm the library, darling. Come on in.
Hello, Helen, baby. You sound like you found oil in the basement. What's with the cheer?
Me?
Isn't it always? I like you.
I like the way you say that. Looking up at me with those big green eyes.
They're not green. They're hazel.
Oh, are they? Let me look closer.
Not until you sing for me.
Sing? Oh, honey, I'm tired. I want to rest.
No, you don't. No, over to the piano. Rick, not here.
But, Helen, all I wanted to do was...
I know, Rick.
Oh, you've been using that Ouija board again. I don't want to sing.
Now look in my eyes.
Close range?
Contact.
I'll sing.
That's better.
Like, you must have been a beautiful baby.
Oh, love it.
You must have been a beautiful baby. You must have been a wonderful child when you were only starting to go to kindergarten. I bet you drove the little boys wild. And when it came to winning blue ribbons, you must have shown the other kids how. I can see the judge's eyes as they handed you the prize. I bet you made the cutest bow. Oh, you must have been a beautiful baby. 'Cause, baby, look at you now. Like that?
That was wonderful, Rick. Come here.
About time.
Oh, Rick. Do you think you can do that and sing, too?
Honey, when you look at me like that, I could kiss you, sing, and knit a whole sweater at the same time.
Rick, could you?
Want to try?
The sweater will take years.
I'll buy that. Come here, we'll start with the neck.
Rick.
You know something?
What?
I may even knit you a whole suit.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Hi Averback, Betty Moran, Howard McNear, Edwin Max, and Jay Novello. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Tonight's story was written by Herb Purdom and edited and directed by Blake Edwards. Portions were transcribed. Dick Powell soon will be seen in the screen version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. How much is your life worth? Think about that for a minute. Is it worth a little care? Well, that's all that's needed to protect it on America's streets and highways. Only your careful driving and your acceptance of personal responsibility for your own life can guard you from the dangers of the road. The price that you may pay for carelessness is a high one, and it's a price that thousands upon thousands of accident victims have already paid. Their gamble with death behind the wheel is a stark warning, a warning that an accident can happen to you. Last year alone, some 32,000 persons were killed in traffic accidents, and well over 1 million others were injured. Smash-ups have averaged more than 1 a minute, every minute of the day and night. These are the facts of traffic dangers. As for the facts of traffic safety, well, they all boil down to just two facts: careful driving by automobile owners, careful walking by pedestrians. So drive carefully, walk carefully. The care you take may save a life, and that life may be your own. Saturday night is packed with entertainment when you stay tuned to NBC's star lineup of shows. Each Saturday, make it a point to listen to NBC. You'll hear Hollywood Star Theater, Ralph Edwards' Truth or Consequences, Your Hit Parade, A Day in the Life of Dennis Day, The Judy Canova Show, Grand Old Opry, and songs by Morton Downey. Now, stay tuned for Lionel Barrymore and Hollywood Star Theater on NBC.
Richard Diamond, the Thomas Jason case from December 31st, 1949. We finish same time, same station with Escape. It's Two If By Sea, starring John Daner, from February 14, 1950.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to Soviet Russia and to the story of a man and a woman who dared to defy a social system in order to be together. As Roger Bax tells it in his tale of intrigue and excitement, Two If By Sea.
Before we hear tonight's story, a brief message from the Ford dealers of America.
Again, for 1950, Ford has won the Fashion Academy Gold Medal Award as the Fashion Car of the Year. Listen to what Mr. Ralph Shaughnessy of Evanston, Illinois, one of the more than 220,000 delighted owners, says about his 50 Ford.
I've been a Ford user for many years, but my new 50 Ford has made me more enthusiastic than ever. That quiet V8 engine is packed with pickup and go, and it gives the feel of real extra power performance. As for appearance, inside and out, it is a style leader. The smart, clean lines of the body design are particularly appealing to me. No wonder it was picked again this year as the best-looking car on the road.
Yes, comments like that are heard every day by Ford dealers. But we want you to prove for yourself that the new 1950 Ford is the one truly fine car in its field. The classified phone directory will give you the name of your nearest Ford dealer, or perhaps you know him personally. Call him tomorrow and ask for a test drive in the new 1950 Ford. Feel its comfort. Hear the purr of its mighty V8 or 95 horsepower 6. See its many big car features. Yes, see, hear, and feel the difference yourself. Test drive the new 1950 Ford tomorrow.
And now we bring you Escape.
Finally, the day arrived, our last day in Moscow. We stood in the chill wind at the airport, watching the huge four-motor plane taxi to the loading ramp. A pair of newlyweds, Philip Sutherland, Moscow reporter for the London Press, homeward bound after 3 years in the Soviet Union, and his bride, Maria, ballerina of the State Ballet. Oh, and Steve Quillen, American newscaster, he was there too. Only Steve was green with envy.
Oh, I hate you both. This time tomorrow you'll be in London, and me, I must remain to languish midst the caviar and vodka.
But don't forget, Steve, you've got a vacation coming soon, and you're to spend it in London with us.
Yes, that's right, Steve. Attention. We're looking forward to it.
Don't worry, I'll be there.
Announcing departure, special flight 2 for London.
Oh, well, that's us, Mrs. Sutherland.
Oh, darling, I can't believe it, at last.
Oh, you're going to love London.
I'd love any place with you.
Well, this is goodbye, kids.
Well, Steve...
Just a moment, please.
We're in a hurry, officer. They've just announced our plane.
I talked to the woman. You are Maria Lemarkina?
I'm Maria Sutherland now.
May I see your transportation papers, please?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. I have them right here. They're all in order.
You may keep yours. Just the woman's. Give them. Thank you. Maria Lemarkina, you will remain in Moscow. Your permission to travel has been revoked.
Revoked? Why?
Well, no, just a moment. You can't do this.
No argument.
Why can't she leave? The Commissar of Travel okay
I her come from the office of the Commissar of Travel.
Is she under arrest?
No. She has simply been denied the privilege of travel.
Well, if Maria can't go, I won't.
I have orders to see that you do go, Mr. Sutherland.
Oh, Philip.
No, it's all right, darling. Now, look, I'm not leaving here without my wife. You have no right
You will be escorted to your plane.
I'm not going to be escorted anywhere.
Ivan, Vasilov!
Oh, Philip, you'd better do what they say, or it might be worse.
For London, we'll board their plane immediately. Gate 6.
All right, Mr. Sutherland, that's your plane.
Philip, oh, Philip.
Don't worry, Phil, I'll take care of her. We'll get this all straightened out. You better go.
Well, goodbye, Maria.
Goodbye, darling. If I can't get out, come back for me. Please come back.
For
For the next couple of months, those two words rang in my ears 1,000 times a day. They never let me rest. Come back. Come back. London, with all its freedom, was a dark, cheerless prison without Maria. I wrote every day, and when, as the weeks passed, I heard no word from her, it became unbearable. And finally, my newspaper arranged a personal interview at the Soviet embassy.
No, 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 absolutely not.
But Maria's my wife. She isn't married to the Soviet Union.
You knew the official attitude when you married, no? The state frowns on Russian women marrying foreigners. And when such a marriage occurs, you take your own risk.
Very well, then, grant me a visa to return to the Soviet Union.
Mr. Sutherland, I am forced to be blunt. You are no longer welcome in my country. And besides, to return would only work a hardship on both of you.
What do you mean?
Forget Maria Lamarkina, Mr. Sutherland. She is a prominent ballerina, the premier danseuse of Moscow, a girl of exceptional talent. And you may as well know this, even now, the state is arranging an official divorce. Good day.
It was monstrous, incredible. Never would I believe that Maria had requested a divorce. I was sure of the love we had shared all too briefly, even though I never received a single letter from her. No, no, no. It was something bigger than the frowning labyrinth of bureaucracy. It was a giant conspiracy to keep us apart. I used the influence I could bring to bear on the people in high places. The matter went at last to the British Foreign Office. Red tape, it would seem, was not a monopoly of Red Russia. No. We grew a vigorous and hardy variety in Whitehall. So I made my own plan. And by the time Steve Quillen arrived on his vacation, I was ready to put it into action.
Oh, Phil, you're crazy. It can't be done.
Oh, yes, it can, Steve. Here, look at this map. Now, here. A small boat could sail out of Southfleet, cross the North Sea, work into the Baltic, through the Skagerrak, and then sail northeast into the Gulf of Finland.
Phil.
Yes?
I know how badly you want Maria, but that kind of a trip would be impossible.
It can be done if it's planned right.
All right. Look. Suppose you get as far as the Gulf.
Yes?
And suppose no patrol boat or observation plane uses you for target practice. What then? Maria's in Moscow. That's in the heart of White Russia.
Ah, yes, but every summer her ballet troupe goes on tour through the north, and they always hit Pirita, a summer resort. Here, look here on the map. It's right here on the coast. Mm. I was there once. It's just a little town, no harbor. The small craft could put in there one night and pick someone up with no trouble at all.
At night?
Yes.
How could you possibly get in?
We'll follow the Vimsi light about 4 miles up from the main beach at Pirita, somewhere in that dark stretch.
Do you realize how that would have to be timed? Well, you'd have to be there not only on the right day, but almost at the right minute. And you have no way of knowing exactly when Mario will be in Pirita.
Well, I was sort of counting on you for that, Steve.
I'd be glad to write and tell you, Phil, but suppose there were some last-minute changes in her schedule and you were out at sea waiting to...
Now, you have a schedule that doesn't change, Steve.
What?
I hear. You broadcast from Moscow to New York once a day. That's your job. Now, perhaps some way we could work out a code system and I could tune in on your newscast from aboard ship and keep informed.
What ship?
Oh, well, the boat, the one I bought yesterday.
What?
Yes, the Dawn. I spent every shilling I had on her. She's a small schooner with an auxiliary engine, but she can make that trip.
Phil, do you mean you're actually going through with this?
Well, of course, Steve. Look, I love Maria and she loves me, and this is all I can see to do about it.
All right, Phil. If you're willing to take such a chance, I'm with you.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Thanks.
But, Phil, you can't sail all alone. I know you're a good sailor.
Oh, no. I don't intend to. I have a friend who knows the Baltic waters like he knows his own bathtub.
And he's going with you? Mm. You've already talked to him.
Oh, yes. He's a fine chap. Oh, that must be he now. I asked him to come over tonight.
Hello, Phil.
Denny, Diddy. Good to see you. Come in.
This must be Mr. Quillen. I'm Denny.
Hello, fellow conspirator.
Oh, it's going to be something, don't you think?
That, Mr. Denny, is the understatement of the week.
We spent the next 7 days working out a careful timetable and a code. And when Steve went back to Moscow, we rehearsed the code. And it worked. Every ninth word on his daily broadcast was a message to us. And one day, a month later, we put out for the Baltic Sea, keeping daily radio contact with Steve. Finally, we dropped anchor in the Gulf of Finland, 30 miles off the beach at Pirita, and waited for the final message.
This is Russia.
Radio Moscow calling.
This is it, yes, I'm ready.
Broadcasting system in New York. Mr. Stephen Quillian, correspondent for Standard Broadcasting System, will broadcast for 2 minutes, beginning 5 minutes past 4 o'clock.
Hello, New York. Hello, New York. This is Quillian. Here's a time check. Coming up on my watch, 4 minutes and 30 seconds past four. Woof, that was 4 minutes and 30 seconds past four. I'll go ahead at exactly 15 seconds after woof. Woof.
Double check this, Denny.
Don't worry, I will.
This is Steve Quillian reporting to you from Leningrad. I've been touring this battered city, studying all the reconstruction work in progress. Leningraders have certainly set themselves tremendous tasks. One of the architects, a blonde, vital woman of about 40, told me that on all occasions, Leningrad had reckoned to show the way, to other parts of Soviet Russia in making good progress with its economic plans, and that with luck and hard work, it should keep the lead.
Okay, Denny, that's all of it. Cut it off.
What did he say?
Ah, this is what we've been waiting for. Here, all set. Blonde on way. Good luck.
Oh, good. That means by 10 o'clock tonight you'll be holding Mari in your arms. Wouldn't Uncle Joe just bite the stem off his pipe if he knew he was going to lose one of his prettiest citizens tonight?
The seconds ticked slowly into sluggish minutes. The minutes stretched into unending hours until sundown, when we would start our dash for the beach. I had waited too long and traveled too far to let any hitch upset our plans. But to wait those long hours was pure agony. At last, darkness fell and we turned over our engines and started to the beach, our running lights extinguished.
There it is, Phil.
Yeah?
Over there.
Yes.
Those are the Vimsi lights.
Aha.
Now, down there, about a mile down the beach, where you see all the smaller lights?
Yes, yes.
That's the bathing beach and the dancing pavilions.
Yes, yes.
The town's farther in. Maria should be right opposite us now, on the dark stretch straight ahead.
Denny, I can hardly believe it. Maria, only a mile away.
Well, come on, let's drop the hook and get the dinghy over the side.
We rowed silently toward this shadowy shore, and I strained my eyes for the sight of Maria standing on the beach, but it was too dark to see anything but the line of sullen, brooding hills against the sky. And then suddenly I made out a figure standing alone, quiet, waiting.
Did you see something?
Maria, she's there, you see?
Be quiet. Sit down, you'll capsize us. It's only a few yards. We can
I can't wait, Denny.
Phil, you fool! Be careful!
Maria! Maria, here I am! Oh, Maria, darling, you...
You are Philip Sutherland?
Who are you? Where's Maria?
Do not be afraid of me. I am a friend of Maria Lamarkina.
Well, where is she?
Maria cannot meet you tonight.
Why? What has happened?
Listen to me carefully, Mr. Sutherland. She tried desperately.
Yes.
But it was impossible, so she sent me to give you a message.
What?
I repeat, word for word. There is no hope of ever getting out of Russia. I will never stop loving you, but this must be. Goodbye forever.
Phil, come on, you two. You can talk later. Let's get out of this place.
Denny, this isn't Maria. This is a friend of hers. She says Maria's not coming. That she'll never come.
What? Why not?
I don't know.
Tonight, Maria Lamarkina is with Ballet at Putin. She has been commanded to give special performance, Arvin Colonel General Obyomov of Red Army. There was no possible way she could...
Where is this ballet?
At Theater in Pirita, 3 miles from here.
Oh, no.
Now, I must go before they find me. I am sorry. My heart goes out to you.
No, wait.
Let her go. She risked her life to come here at all.
I'm going into that theater and get Maria and bring her back to the boat.
Phil, sailing into a dark beach is one thing, but trying to walk through a Russian town and kidnap a well-known ballerina is quite another. Phil, don't...
Listen, I'm going in. And if I'm not back here in 4 hours at 2 a.m. with her, then leave by yourself, Denny.
Oh, Phil, I couldn't.
Look, I'll be here with her by 2 o'clock or I won't be back at all.
In just a moment, we will return to Escape. But first, a message from the Ford dealers of America.
The more than 220,000 proud owners of a 1950 Ford say that driving is proof positive that it is America's outstanding value. The one fine car in the low price field. We Ford dealers invite you to test drive the 50 Ford yourself. You'll thrill to its tremendous power and flashing acceleration. You'll marvel at its ease of handling and ease of parking. And when you try a rough road, you'll experience a luxurious big car feel of solid roadability and genuine comfort. Yes, 50 Ford owners are proud owners. Proud of the performance of their cars and proud of the beauty, which for the second straight year has won Ford the New York Fashion Academy Gold Medal Award as the Fashion Car of the Year. Tomorrow, drop in to see your Ford dealer. If you don't know him personally, he's listed in the classified telephone directory. He'll gladly arrange a test drive for you in either the great new V8 or the 95 horsepower 6. Then you'll see, hear, and feel the difference. Before you buy any car at any price, test drive the 1950 Ford.
And now we return you to the second act of Escape.
It was three long, dangerous miles into the town of Pirita, and somehow I had to get Maria out of the ballet theater and back aboard our schooner. But in spite of the fact I spoke Russian fluently, dressed the way I was in soiled sailing clothes, I didn't stand a chance. For the next half hour, I walked steadily, passing a few night swimmers along the beach. Then I came to a crowded area where there was a dancing pavilion, and a sudden idea came to me. I walked over to a man in uniform standing by a pile of clothes, on top of which was a Red Army cap.
Oi, Corporal.
What is it you want, comrade? Oh,
I'm glad I found you. There is some trouble on the road back there. Someone tried to steal a car.
Where? Yeah. What sort of car, tovarish?
It was a Black Army Zis.
A Zis? Oh, no,
it
no.
It's not yours, is it? The militia are making trouble about a missing chauffeur.
Tovarish, help me, I beg you. Keep your eye on the colonel's uniform while I go see. The colonel's in swimming now, and if you find out...
I didn't hesitate a single minute. As soon as he got out of sight, I grabbed the bundle of clothes, stepped into the shadows behind the pavilion. In 3 minutes, I was wearing a loose-fitting uniform that told the world I was a colonel in the 12th Guard Division, wearer of the rarely conferred Order of the Suvorov, and a hero of the Soviet Union. And also, there was a billfold in my pocket, fat with Russian currency and military papers. I was now prepared to make my entrance in the ballet theater of Pirita.
I would like a ticket, please.
Oh, Comrade Colonel, I'm so sorry, but there's not one to be had, not one in the entire house.
Yes, there is, clerk.
Huh?
The colonel is invited to sit in my box.
His collar insignia and his decorations glittered in the light of the theater lobby. I recognized him immediately as Colonel General Vladimir Abramov, a famous soldier of the Soviet. I had interviewed him back in 1945 and written a long story about him for my newspaper. He looked straight into my face, and his eyes seemed to say, "Well, Philip Sutherland, when did you join the Red Army?"
I see you wear the order of the Chuvarov, even as I. I would be pleased if you would join me in my private box.
Well, thank you just the same, General, but it wouldn't be right.
Nonsense, I insist. I am alone, and you can still see the last part of the ballet. Maria Lamarkina is beautiful. Come, take a look at her.
He took me by the arm and led me conspicuously down the aisle to his box. It was easy to see that he was the guest of honor. The whole thing was like a dream. I couldn't believe that I was really sitting there, watching my Maria, looking so incredibly beautiful, I almost stopped breathing. Time was our enemy. I thought the ballet would never end. When it was finally over, I knew I had to do something to make my presence known to her, or she might be lost to me forever. Maria! Maria! Maria!
You know her, Comrade Colonel?
Well, yes, sir. I know her, sir. Rather well.
Really? An old lover, perhaps, huh?
Well, I'm her brother, Sergei.
Ah, brother. Well, that is good. It would not do for two Russian soldiers, two orders of the Suvorov, to fight over the same woman, huh?
No.
Come, brother Sergei. Let us go backstage and talk to little Maria. She will be most anxious to see you and me. I am having supper with her tonight. Maria, look, I have a surprise for you, your brother.
Maria?
Well, Maria, don't you know your own brother? Or has he grown too fat on Red Army rations, huh?
It's really me, Maria. Sergei.
Oh, Sergei! Sergei! It's been so long.
Too long, Maria.
Tender.
Hey. Well, how are you, my little sister? How's the family? How's Shura? And Mishikov, is he still in the factory at Donetsk?
I can't answer all your questions in one breath, Sergei.
This is a very happy occasion. I will go prepare drinks.
Fine, yes.
Philip, darling, what are you doing here? They'll kill you if they find out.
Why didn't you come to the beach?
He was with me all day.
Oh, Maria, I have never seen you perform so well. Tonight you danced my eyes out.
How long are you going to be in town, Sergei?
I leave with the dawn, Maria, darling.
Oh, well, in that case, we haven't much time. We must do our best to entertain Sergei, huh, Maria?
Of course, Colonel General.
Oh, please, just call me plain General. Here, your glasses.
Thank you.
And now, a toast. Until the dawn. And to brothers and sisters, wherever they find themselves. Brother, huh? You don't look at her the way a brother looks at his sister. You don't hold her the way a brother holds his sister. You hold Maria the way I would like to hold Maria.
I guess I was a little emotional, sir. Well, I haven't seen her for almost a year.
Brother, how is it you have not seen Maria for almost a year when your 12th Guard Division is stationed just outside Moscow? Tell me that.
Well, I was...
You have trouble answering, huh?
We were both busy.
Oh, yes, I understand, Maria. Busy. Come to think of it, I don't remember a Colonel Lamarkinov ever winning the Order of Suvorov. When did you get it, Sergei?
After the Battle of Kiev.
Kiev? Oh, yes, a great battle. Only I thought that was the 10th Division.
Oh, well, I was with them for 6 months.
With the 10th Division?
Yes.
Who was your commanding officer?
It's been so long, sir, I can't remember his name.
I'll refresh your memory, brother Sergei. It was Borovsky, and of course now I know you lie.
My brother does not lie, General.
I'm afraid, Maria, I've trapped him. At Kiev was not the 10th Division or the 12th Division, but Timoshenko's 7th. Now let me see your papers, brother Sergei.
I'm afraid I left them in my car.
Let me see them. And be careful how you hand them over. It's very interesting. Brother Sergei has suddenly become Colonel Joseph Rakuski-Skalia. What do you think of that, Sister Maria?
General, it wasn't his fault. I made him do it. Don't do anything to me.
No, Maria, it was my idea.
Ah, young love and mutual sacrifice and touching. Do you know what I am going to do, Sergei?
No. What?
Put you under arrest. Stand where you are. I would be most happy to shoot you. I will get to the bottom of this soon. Corporal!
Maria!
Do you think I killed him?
I don't know, but you did him in thoroughly with that decanter.
Philip, I'm frightened.
Yeah, so am I, but let's talk about that after we get aboard the schooner. We slipped out of the theater and raced along the deserted cobbled streets. The town clock sounded 1:30. 3 miles to cover in 30 minutes. Maria was running to keep up with my long strides. Nowhere in sight was a car I could commandeer or even a bicycle. We could count on nothing but our own strength and the driving need we both had to spend the rest of our lives together. 25 minutes later, we were hurrying down the long slope toward the beach, and Ahead of us, the Vimsi light twinkled mockingly and seemed just as far away. Mario's breath was coming in little sobs. My lungs ached with an agony unendurable. And then I heard it. The town clock struck two. He had failed. So near to the beach and yet too far. The planning of months lost by seconds.
Oh, Philip, I'm sorry I couldn't go any faster.
No, 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 dear. It wasn't your fault. It was just too much against us.
Philip!
Shh, quiet.
I apologize for bothering you, comrade, but I have orders to check all persons along the beach. The colonel's uniform has been stolen.
I hit him with all the strength I had left in me. And as he fell, I dived after him. He rolled down the hill onto the rocks. I couldn't feel any pain or blows. All I wanted to do was get my hands around his throat and squeeze the life out of him. He fell away from me. And I crawled over to where Maria lay, her breath coming in painful sobs. And I collapsed beside her. I could barely lift one arm to put it around her. And then another man's figure loomed up out of the dark, walking slowly towards us. And with him, all of my hopes of rescuing Maria, all of the working and planning, all of the reason for living seemed gone. But I couldn't go down without a fight. Somewhere I dragged up enough strength to struggle to my feet to meet him. And he grabbed my arm and we went down.
Phil, it's me, Danny. Don't...
Danny. Danny, I couldn't tell in the dark. I thought you'd gone. I thought...
You didn't really think I'd leave without you and Mario, did you? Come on, Phil. Let's get Mario aboard the schooner.
We're going to make it.
Certainly we are. We'll be in England in a week.
Phil.
Yes, darling.
Where are we?
Far enough. You can stop looking over your shoulder.
Really? Really?
Yes, really. We're going home, Mrs. Sutherland.
In just a moment, a word about next week's exciting story of Escape. But first, a message from your local Ford dealer.
If housewives bought trucks, they'd rush down to their Ford dealers and place their orders right now. Why? Because the American housewife can spot a bargain a mile away. And Ford truck prices have just been reduced, making Ford America's biggest truck bargain. That's right, friends. Price reductions up to $80. These reductions are made possible by engineering advances and improved production methods. Ford trucks for 50 at these new reduced prices have all the extra value features that have enabled Ford trucks to score greater sales gains than all other makes combined. They are packed with truck advancements that give more performance at less cost. See them at your Ford dealers today. And remember, Ford trucks cost less because Ford trucks last longer. Latest available registrations prove it.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented Two If by Sea by Roger Bax, adapted for radio by E. Jack Newman and John Michael Hayes. Featured in the cast were John Daner as Philip, Barton Yarborough as Denny, Paul Fries as Steve Quillen, and Marta Mitrovich as Maria. Also heard were Inga Yolis, Jack Crucian, Bill Conrad, and Paul Dubov. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Next week...
You are within a few days of your release after 8 years of horror on the prison island of New Caledonia. But between you and final freedom stands the love of a beautiful girl and the monstrous figure of Monsieur Deneux, the official executioner.
Next week, we escape with John Russell's terrifying story, The Red Mark. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
February 14, 1952, If by Sea, from Escape with John Daner. That takes care of Same Time, Same Station for this week. More Howard McNear coming up next week here on Same Time, Same Station.